ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Tom Linney.
Here on ACT, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
We also talk about why a plant-based diet is the best thing one can do for one's health and for the environment.
So if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, if you're concerned about the environment, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas. Coming up next, we feature a conversation with Zoe Eisenberg. She's co-author of The Lusty Vegan. That's a little later in the show, but first some news.
For many years, cruelty-free designer Kat Mendenhall has operated an online store at katmendenhall.com, where you can purchase 100% vegan Texas-style cowboy boots and accessories. This month, in Dallas, Texas, Kat is opening the city's first vegan boutique, Mend RT, which stands for Mending the World with Vegan Retail Therapy. The brick-and-mortar boutique will be an important stepping stone in the emerging world of cruelty-free fashion, selling cowboy boots, belts, jewelry, clothing, and home goods that are free of animal products. Mendenhall says that proving that animals do not have to suffer for high-end quality fashion is something she's deeply committed to. Leather made from animals is extremely damaging to the environment. Turning skin into leather requires massive amounts of energy and dangerous chemicals, including mineral salts, formaldehyde, coal tar derivatives, and various oils, dyes, and finishes, some of which are cyanide-based. Most leather produced in the U.S. is chrome-tanned. All waste containing chromium is considered hazardous by the Environmental Protection Agency. People who work in and live near tanneries suffer diseases. Many die from cancers caused by exposure to toxic chemicals used to process the leather. The Center for Disease Control found that the incidence of leukemia among residents in an area near one tannery was 5 times the U.S. average. Kat Mendenhall boots are made from a microfiber material which is designed to have a leather grain look and a natural appearance. This material is a specifically engineered nylon. The natural grain look is manufactured in the U.S. and is not a PVC product. The material contains no plasticizers or off-gassing, and so it's very eco-friendly. Kat Mendenhall has quite an extensive background. She's a vegan lifestyle coach certified by the Main Street Vegan Academy, a culinary nutrition expert certified by the Academy of Culinary Nutrition, certified in plant-based nutrition through the T. Colin Campbell Foundation, and a Food for Life instructor certified by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Read more about her specific coaching, teaching, cooking services, and handmade vegan cowboy boots and other vegan products at her website, katmendenhall.com. And when in Dallas, stop by her new store, Mend RT.
A new study has found that out of the 20 million tons of fish caught by commercial industries a year, about 27% of ocean fish that are caught become fish meal or fish oil. While this might not seem incredibly shocking at face value, when you learn that fish meal and fish oil are primarily used to feed farmed fish or factory farmed animals such as cows, pigs, and chickens, you're likely to start scratching your head. The world's oceans are currently teetering on the brink of collapse due to large-scale commercial fishing operations. According to a report from the UN Food and Agricultural Organization, 80% of global fish stocks are fully to overexploited, depleted, or in a state of collapse. Also, about 90% of large predatory fish stocks, like sharks, swordfish, and bluefin tuna, have been diminished. Some conservation experts predict that our oceans could be empty by the year 2048 if fishing continues at its current rate. So with this information in mind, why on earth are we adding insult to injury by depleting the oceans further to feed our appetite for meat? We are running out of time to save our ocean ecosystem, and yet again, we're seeing efforts to feed livestock instead of people, causing mass destruction to the world's environment. Eating seafood may be directly depleting our ocean, but it seems there is yet another connection to marine collapse in the form of meat. While this information is troubling, we can all help make a difference with our food choices. By reducing the amount of meat and seafood you consume, or eliminating it completely, you can help lower the demand for fish meal, which is causing fish stock depletion. To learn more about how your diet can help to keep our oceans clean, join One Green Planet's hashtag EatForThePlanet movement. Stay with us. Coming up next, we feature a conversation with writer and editor Zoe Eisenberg. She's the co-author of the book The Lusty Vegan. Zoe enjoys writing about health, wellness, relationships, and sexuality. Her work has appeared in a variety of online and print publications, including The Huffington Post, Shape.com, and Thought Catalog. That's next on Animal Concerns of Texas. Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Zoe Eisenberg. Thanks for being with us, Zoe.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Zoe, we like to ask our guests how they became vegan in the first place.
Yeah, sure. For me, it was more of a slow fade. I stopped eating animals in high school for health reasons, actually. I had low energy and depression, so I looked into diet as a remedy. I cut out meat and processed foods and saw a really big improvement in my energy. But at the time, I was still addicted to cheese.
Oh, everybody starts that way.
Yes. So, but as I began to identify first as a vegetarian and look into what that really meant, all of the, you know, the animal cruelty issues popped up, the environmental issues popped up, and I hadn't really been faced with any of those before. So immediately they made sense, and I started to identify more as a vegan, and it took me a few years to ditch cheese, but by college I was a full-time vegan.
So you were? Did you any particular book stand out that you read that might have pushed you over the edge?
I don't even remember. I remember in college being really struck by Alicia Silverstone's The Kind
yeah.
Diet.
Uh-huh.
You mentioned that book. That's a great book, and I think she's made a few since, like Kind Mama for Mothers. So that one was in my arsenal. I remember in college being, you know, too broke to afford her book, so I would go to the bookstore and, like, read it over and over until eventually I could buy it myself.
Well, it seems like quite a few people were influenced by her because of her, you know, she just had was so popular in
pop
culture.
I was just kind of turned on by her.
Yeah. Well, there's that. Yeah, she's wonderful. And I know, you know, as a young girl, I definitely looked up to her for her work in film. So then when she started promoting herself as an activist and I could make that positive correlation, it was really helpful. So it's,
I even liked her as Batgirl.
Yes,
Batgirl.
Definitely.
Oh.
or Clueless.
Great.
Yeah. Piece of work.
Unfortunately, to stay on the topic of Greg being turned on. Let's talk about your book, which you co-authored. It's called The Lusty Vegan. What inspired you to write that?
Yeah, so I wrote that with my co-author, Ayinde Howell, who is a writer and a vegan chef. In college, I studied creative writing, health promotion, and sexuality. So right after college, Ayinde hired me as an editorial intern for his awesome blog, IEatGrass.com. And at the time, I also had my own blog where I was writing about relationships and sex and veganism, which is kind of a weird fusion, I know. But because veganism is so much more than a diet, it's really a worldview. I found that it impacts your relationship much more than, you know, a paleo diet, for instance, or something that's just strictly what you're putting on your plate. So I was writing about that, and that struck a chord with Ayinde as we started working together. And he asked me to write a column on his website, I Eat Grass, just strictly focusing on how those issues can impact your relationship. And we called that column The Lusty Vegan. And as more and more of our online community started reacting to it, we realized that it was really a hot-button topic.
Yeah.
And decided to write the book on it.
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like the two of the most important things in people's life is their food and their relationships. And so
exactly.
once people take the turn to veganism, I think the next logical question for many is you know, how do I find someone who's going to share, you know, my passion and, you know, stay on the same journey with me?
Yes, exactly. And there's some vegans who, you know, they won't even consider dating anyone that doesn't practice veganism as well, which is understandable, and that's a personal choice.
I'm sort of that way. I think I would lower myself to date a vegetarian as long as they were sort of inclined to move towards veganism.
Right, right. But for me, in my early 20s, when I started writing about this, I was having a real hard time finding someone who was both vegan and romantically compatible for me. I'd gone on dates with a lot of like vegans and vegetarians and had found that maybe the only thing we had in common was our point of view on animal consumption, and we really didn't have much in common outside of that. And so it was sort of a reoccurring problem, and I ended up being in several relationships back-to-back with omnivores. And that, you know, that created its own arsenal of issues. And Allende, who was actually, interestingly enough, born vegan, his parents were vegan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he was raised vegan. And when we started working together, he was in his 30s and had never dated another vegan. So we both had all this experience with kind of trying to navigate a relationship with somebody who is really different than you and how you can do that with love and compassion and respect, because really that's what veganism is all about, compassion and love.
It seems to me that I really have the belief that I want someone who shares my ethics.
Uh-huh.
And so I was married to a vegetarian for 12 years. We were both vegetarian at the time. And after that, I dated only vegans for 20 years, with one exception. A lady asked me to help her become vegetarian and vegan. And we dated for 2 years, and she never did change. And eventually, I think guilt got the better of her. My veganism was a threat to her sense of self, and so she left me by text message on Valentine's Day.
That's awful.
Yeah.
That's awful. So we have a lot of stories like that, actually, in our book. So our book navigates the trajectory of a relationship in a playful way that marries food and recipes into it. So we have appetizers, which is our first date chapter. We have the morning after, which is breakfast, all the way up to like holiday meals, which is meet the omnivores and things like that. And we also interviewed a lot of vegans and some notable vegans about situations just like what you mentioned, with how dating people who were not vegan or maybe who were vegan impacted the overall scope of their relationship. And everyone has a story about it.
In your book, you offer some tips about how to meet vegans, and I'd like to share that getting involved in your local vegetarian society is a good way.
Definitely.
And going to vegetarian and animal rights conferences and festivals.
Right.
Yeah, and do you have any other advice on the meeting people front? Just to
You know, online is pretty, I don't want to say easy, but it offers simpler ways now for people who maybe are nervous about going out and meeting people in person or just don't have access, people who aren't in big cities and maybe don't have access to vegan meetups, big vegan conferences. You can meet people online. I know Allende has told me that he's met some pretty cool vegan women through Instagram, actually.
Oh, interesting.
In his city. He lives in L.A., so it's a bit easier for him. But definitely putting yourself out there always works the best, and especially when you're not really looking for a relationship, I found. If you're just kind of doing your own thing with like-minded people, you will meet someone who's a better fit.
Facebook, almost all my friends on Facebook are vegan.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And you know, I'm curious to what your thoughts are, just to go back about it, is, you know, your thoughts on conversion, you know, from both standpoints. You know, oftentimes an omnivore meets a vegan, and both of them are probably initially thinking about converting the other to their lifestyle. Where are your feelings about, you know, when someone goes into a relationship with that on their mind?
Right. So we talk a lot about that in the book. I think it's like our number one principle is never get into a relationship with someone you want to change. I mean, it just doesn't work if your initial outlook is to change them. I mean, if it happens naturally because they're inspired by you or because your lifestyles kind of fuse together, then that is amazing. But in terms of like dating someone with the either, you know, spoken or just kind of subliminal idea of changing them, it creates a lot of tension, like you mentioned with your partner who felt a lot of guilt and felt threatened. It just ends up in a big old mess almost every single time. It ends up with, like, you know, them spitefully eating chicken when you break up, you know. it just doesn't make sense. And also, you can't change for anyone other than yourself. So.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, I've run across a lot of stories about people who changed because their partner was vegan. And once I was in a short relationship with a woman who, after a couple of months, said to me, "It's been fun, but I have to leave you now because it's my mission to date non-vegan men and convert them."
Wow. Wow.
I attract some strange ones.
Yeah, that sounds pretty aggressive, but, you know, That's an interesting method of conversion. when the relationship that I explore in the book, Ayende and I both chose like a long-term relationship that we were in to sort of study in the book and how veganism impacted that specific relationship. So the one that I discussed, my partner was an omnivore, and he's a great guy, like really sensitive, environmentally aware, but just like the eating animals thing just like didn't click for him. And then after we broke up, I had left a bunch of my things around the house that we were living in together. And one of them was, I think it was the Jonathan Safran Foer book, Eating Animals. Mm-hmm. Have you read that
one?
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
That's a great one. And he read it after I had left. So this is after like 3 years of him, you know, listening to me talk about veganism and whatever, live my life that way. Afterwards, he picked that book up and became vegetarian.
It can be difficult to convert friends and family. My mother had read all the articles I'd written when I was a writer for Animal Rights Online.
Uh-huh.
And that never converted her. But then one day she called me and said she'd seen a show on television about what they do to cows, and that converted her.
Oh, isn't that the worst when you're like, I've been telling you that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep, of course. Well, you know, sometimes, like, I don't know. You never know what someone's motivation is. So when someone's coming at you with their point of view and you're in a relationship with them, you might not be really ready to hear what they're trying to say. You're not sure their motivations. But when you hear it from an outside source, sometimes it makes more sense, mm-hmm. unfortunately.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, going back to the book and the how you break out the recipes, I'm curious what the thought process was for creating the appetizers. Is it their mindset that we should be eating certain foods at certain chapters in the relationship?
I think it's more so just more sort of just like a playful trajectory and a way to frame the different stories that we were talking about. We do have a really cool food for sex chapter in mm-hmm. which we talk about the way that what we eat impacts our sex drive, our hormones.
Let's talk about aphrodisiacs now.
Yeah. So I don't really believe in an aphrodisiac in the idea that you put something in your mouth and it's immediately going to make you want to have sex, but more so that people who have super active libidos and just have a really great sex drive tend to have just a better primed organs that are just working better. Their whole body's working much better. They don't have indigestion. You know, they don't have a lot of digestive issues that can negatively impact your libido. I mean, I know for older men, just saturated fats, you know, have like a huge correlation to erectile dysfunction. Like,
sure.
So we talk a lot about that, about eating foods that open up your blood vessels, that promote just a healthier body overall, which will eventually improve your libido, your energy, your stamina, also probably make you, this might be, you know, my bias, but more sexually appealing to your partner when you're healthy, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, one, and also that you probably look better because you're healthier as a vegan. And with that becomes better self-esteem and body confidence.
Definitely. It's, you know, because how you look is how, you know, we all have different types. We all want someone who looks a little bit different. So it's not just that it will change your body type or make you more physically appealing, but just energetically more appealing. We want to be around those who are, you know, healthy, who are active, who are positive and uplifted. And a lot of that comes back to your diet.
Right. One of the foods you mentioned as being good for your sex drive is avocado. And I learned something I didn't know from your book, which is the Aztecs called avocado trees the testicle tree because of the fact that they grow in pairs.
Yes.
Never heard that before. That's fun.
Yeah, I love that, actually.
Are there other foods that just off the top of your head stand out as, you know, because as you mentioned, there's two prongs. It's one, it's avoiding the bad foods, foods that are high in cholesterol, you know, meat, dairy, eggs, that improves the blood flow. And then there's also foods that also help, you know, sort of scrub, you know, the arterial walls and help keep your blood flowing, foods that are high in fiber or maybe zinc or vitamin B. Is there particular foods that stand out to you that people should be eating?
Dark leafy greens, just if you research those and their impact on like your libido, have a lot of great things backing them up. So do blueberries, mm-hmm. strangely enough. And then spicy foods. Everyone kind of has heard that before, spicy foods. So long as like your stomach can handle a little bit of spice, then it does really great things for mm-hmm. your sex drive as well.
Right. Also, there might be something to foods that just look sexual, like I'm thinking of banana split with a couple of strawberries at one end.
Right. Oh, for sure. I mean, eating is such a sensual experience, you know, by the definition of sensual. It encompasses all of your different senses. So for sure, if you can find food that you feel good eating, that looks good while you're eating it, and eat that with your partner, that's always a little sexy.
People will be happy to know that chocolate is good for you and for your sex drive.
Right. So eat that in bed and don't feel bad. There's so many more vegan products that you can get easily. So like vegan whipped cream in a can.
Oh, yeah.
Thing. That's fun.
That kind of raises an issue you talk about in the book about vegan accessories, which might be hard to find for some people. For example, condoms.
Yeah, luckily these days there's a lot of condom brands that are vegan that you can actually find in stores and definitely online. One of my favorite brands is Sir Richard's. They are really great because for every condom that you purchase through them, they donate condoms as well. So that's really cool. It's kind of like the Tom's Shoes of condoms. But also just looking for things in your like sex products, like lubricants. There's a lot of non-vegan lubricants out there, so it's important to sort of really scrutinize what products you're using. And sometimes it's not even just you know, if it's vegan or not. It's just, is it good for your body at all? Because as you know, our skin is the largest organ. So if you're choosing something like a lubricant that has all sorts of nasty chemicals in it, it's really not good for you. And it's something, I think we say in the book, are you having sex with animals?
Yeah.
I think that's how we frame it. So.
And you also mentioned coconut oil.
Yeah.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah, it tastes good. It smells good. It smells like you're on vacation. It does stain up your sheets because it is oil.
Uh-huh.
So for some people, it's not their favorite, but I really like using it.
It's hard to follow that one.
Speechless?
A little bit.
One thing that is very off-putting is lambskin condoms.
Yeah, that's gross.
I can't imagine putting sheep intestines on my privates.
I know. It's hard because I know originally that the intention was that for people who are allergic to latex.
Uh-huh.
Right.
But, yeah, it's pretty off-putting.
Yeah, people don't know that latex is not a vegan product.
Right.
It's got a milk protein. What is it, casein?
Casein, yep. That's in a lot of sex products, weirdly enough.
Hmm. Well, they've got to get rid of that casein somehow.
Yep.
Well, for, you know, I think, and also the relationship status. So going back to that, when, how do you feel about, you know, when people bring someone, their partner home for the first time and sort of introducing them and how to make it easier for someone who's a vegan that you're dating to come into the household and make it easier for them to adjust and be a part of the family, even if the family is very much committed to, you know, non-vegan lifestyle.
Right. I mean, my number one tip always is to, especially, you know, if you're coming home for holiday time, that's quite often when you meet the family for the first time, it's over meals because as a culture, that's how we celebrate, that's how we bond, is through eating. So my number one suggestion is always to come prepared either with your own dish that's vegan or willing to help out in the kitchen, which does a lot of great things. One, you look helpful, which is great. Depending on who else is prepping food in the kitchen, you might have a chance to bond with, you know, whatever parental unit is in there cooking. And then you also can keep your eye on what's going in foods because people who aren't vegan and they don't understand it, you know, they're like, we made these mashed potatoes and they're totally vegan and they're just like drenched in butter. And it's not because they're scheming to try to get you to eat butter. It's because they just don't understand. So I like to suggest, you know, if you're coming into a non-vegan household and you know that ahead of time, come with your own food that you're willing to share, come ready to help, just trying to be open and receptive, and also to just like pay attention to the dialogue around veganism, because as you mentioned, you had that partner who was threatened by...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a weird thing that happens is people, when they're not vegan and they hear that you're vegan, can often feel like somehow you're attacking them with your own point of view, even if you're not verbally being aggressive at all.
Right.
Yeah.
So just sort of watching what that dialogue is like and really how receptive the person that you're engaged with is to actually hearing about your lifestyle. Are they really interested in why you are vegan or why you chose to be vegan, or are they looking to pick a fight? Because nobody wants a fight with their, you know, they don't want to bring their new girlfriend home and have them get in a huge fight with Uncle Jerry about the turkey on the plate.
Right.
Well, some women like to fight so that they can have makeup sex.
Well, I don't know if that's just the female trait. I think that's just some people.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think there's a lot to be said, too, for being candid and clear with family members about someone's limitations, because I think the one thing I think I've learned is the longer you wait to tell someone, the harder it is,
because then
you're in the moment, and then it could be taken more offensively, like, oh, you're not eating my food, like, as I'm handing it to you.
Right.
So, and I think that goes to say in a lot of different social situations, not just in relationships.
Of course. So if your partner's bringing you home to meet their family for the first time, and you have no prior relationship with the family, it's really up to your partner to sort of broach that subject, and you can ask them to do that in a bunch of different ways, to broach that subject with their family, like, hey, I'm bringing Jessica home, just so you know, like, she's vegan, so, you know, we're going to bring X, Y, and Z, or what are you planning to make, and how can we help you, and those kinds of dialogues are really important, so that you walk into a household that knows exactly, like, what they're dealing with and what you're dealing with, so you guys can all get along and start off on the right foot, so you're not like that weird vegan girl that,
don't brought home. Guess who's coming to dinner?
Right. There you go.
Zoe, there's a ton in your book, recipes and stories, and it's a lot of fun. Where can our listeners go to learn more about The Lusty Vegan?
TheLustyVegan.com. So our website is there. We update that with blog posts. We also have a pretty active Facebook group, The Lusty Vegan, and we have an Instagram handle, too, which is also The Lusty Vegan. So we're pretty active on social media, and you can definitely find both Ayinde and myself there.
Okay, and
great.
It's also available at most of the bookstores like BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon.com.
Yep. Wherever books are sold. So you can get the book on Amazon. You can get the book at most bookstores that you just walk into. We're in Barnes & Noble's. We're in a whole bunch of different places. We also have a Kindle version, which is really popular, so you can read it all right. Yeah, Ayinde is the creator of all the recipes in the book. We have over 80 recipes, and he really worked very hard to make them with ingredients that you can find. I'm pretty sure when he was brainstorming recipes for the book, all of his ingredients were available at just like the regular run-of-the-mill grocery stores around him. So, Trader Joe's, whatever, Safeway, I'm not sure. He lives in Los Angeles, so whatever's right around him. But you don't have to, like, order some specialty ingredient on the internet that you're never going to use again. So I think that was a really great thing about the way he developed his recipes.
We've been talking with Zoe Eisenberg. She's co-author of The Lusty Vegan. Thanks so much for being with us, Zoe.
Thank you so much for having me.
On March 18th, the Vegetarian Society of El Paso will have a bake sale at the Downtown Art and Farmers Market. Be sure and join us for that. And if you'd like to learn more about a plant-based diet, please visit the Vegetarian Society of El Paso's website at vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACK Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the listen button. Until next time, I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Greg Lawson.
For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.